Good morning. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Earlier this summer, when we had a conversation about how to start investing, you called in with way more questions than we could get to. So we've asked financial planner Deb DeLiers to come back and help us understand about how to start investing so that we can bolster our financial future. Maybe we'll get to some of those questions that we couldn't get to the last time. Do you invest? What do you invest in? How did you get into it? Was the experience daunting or did you find it simple? What have you learned and what would you like others to know? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My guest is Deb DeLiers, financial advisor for Northright Financial. She's based in Green Bay. Deb, welcome back to The Morning Show.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
You've said that investment is making your money work for you. And before we dive into picking a financial advisor or investing even if you have debt, let's get a refresher. Walk us through why people should consider investing.
Again, as you said, it's making your money work for you. So the sooner that you can get funds into the market, the sooner you can take advantage of compound investing. So the example I had given last time was if you put $1 in a savings account, for example, at the end of that year, you're going to have some interest that's accumulated. Maybe it's $1.05. That $1.05 is going to generate more interest the following year. So maybe at the end of year two, you're going to have $1.15. And so that interest and the growth in your account will continue to compound over time based on those increases in value. And it's the same in an investment account, just on a larger scale.
So what should people consider when deciding what their investment goal ought to be?
It's really going to be personal to each person or family unit. I don't really believe there's a cookie-cutter financial goal or financial planning process, with the exception of you need to evaluate what's important to you. Are you someone who has a fair amount of debt and the first goal needs to be simply paying that down to have more cash flow each month? Or are you someone who has their debt under control? Maybe you just have a home mortgage and you want to start saving away for retirement. Maybe you have children and you want to start saving for college education. It's really a matter of what's going on in your world today and what is it that you want to achieve in the years to come. And so it starts with having that conversation with yourself.
And how do you determine how much you should invest?
That's going to come down to your monthly budget. So generally, I'm going to talk with people about what's your monthly income and what are your monthly expenses. And right out of the gate, do you have cash flow? Does your income cover all of your expenses? Do you have extra each month? How much is that extra that you can afford to put away into an investment? Do you have an emergency savings account set aside for something that might pop up, you know, very quickly if you can't get your money out of the market within a few days? So it's starting off with that type of analysis to see how much can you invest. If you go through that analysis and there isn't a cash flow at the end of the day, then you have to look at what can you trim from your monthly budget. Maybe it's Starbucks, maybe it's the gym and you're instead going to, you know, work out at home. What can you trim from that monthly budget to create cash flow and help pay off your expenses?
Well, is it worth it if I can only, say, invest $50 or $100 a month?
Absolutely, because as soon as you can start putting some money into the market, again, you're taking advantage of that investment compounding over time. And so every little bit does help. Investing isn't just for the wealthy who can afford to put away hundreds or thousands of dollars, you know, over the course of the month or the course of the year. The sooner you start that investment habit, the more opportunity you have to grow that investment over time. And it's just making a commitment to that investment.
Mm. So which is better, a short-term investment or a long-term investment?
I like looking at long-term investing. The market is going to go up and down over time. If you're looking at it from a short-term standpoint, those investments may carry with more risk. Over time, if you have time to sit in the market, so example, you know, a 35-year-old, they may not be retiring for another 30 years. So they have time in the market. If the market corrects and goes down, they can generally withstand that correction because they're not taking their money out for another 20 to 30 years. For individuals who are at or near the retirement age, depending on what their income needs are and how much money they would need to harvest from their investments, that might be a different conversation. They might be looking at different financial products or investment options to make sure that their money isn't being put at risk in a short-term space. But I generally believe in the philosophy of buy and hold and looking at it from a long-term perspective.
Okay. I know for a lot of people, they look at this and they say, wow, you know, this is like walking into a casino and you don't know the rules for any of the games, and it's really easy to lose if you make a mistake. What do you say to people like that who say, I just don't want to take any risks, and I'm just afraid that I'm going to get in over my head and I'm going to make a mistake?
I think, again, it's starting that conversation with your advisor or potential advisor and really being comfortable having in-depth conversations about where you're at right now. What assets do you have? What are your income sources? What ability do you have to withstand risk from a logistics standpoint in the market versus then your feelings on it? So if there's an individual who has financial reserves and from a standpoint on paper, they can withhold a little bit of risk, then it's conversations with them about what are their beliefs. If they see the market going up and down, does that really put a pit in their stomach? Are they very concerned about that? If that's the case, there are financial products available that might suit them. For example, there are annuities available that have certain guarantees on income and return. However, annuities also tend to have other expenses associated with them that aren't associated with the market in the same way. So it's having a conversation about what are the options and what makes that customer or client feel comfortable. My goal as an advisor is to allow my clients to sleep at night. I want to sleep at night. And if you're in an investment that doesn't make you feel comfortable, it should be reevaluated.
I'd like to sleep at night. That would be that would be awesome. We're talking with Deb DeLeers about investing and how to start investing. And we had this conversation earlier this summer. We had so many questions that we couldn't get to that we decided to have Deb come back for another round and see if we could actually get some of those questions answered. Now, the implication there is that those of you who called and didn't get on the air last time need to pick up your phones right now and call in and ask those questions. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. And if you don't want to be on the air with us, you can give the call screener your question and we'll submit it. Or you can just send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Or if you like Twitter, you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Deb DeLeers is a financial advisor for Northright Financial. She is based in Green Bay. So you're saying to me, you know, John, you don't have to do this alone. You can use a financial advisor. So my next question then is, okay, if I'm going to use a financial advisor, well, first of all, I have to find one that won't laugh at me when they look at my books. But if I'm going to use a financial advisor, what should I be looking for when I go shopping for one?
That's a great question. I really believe that when you start looking at financial advisors, it should almost take the shape of an interview. You should be interviewing that advisor to see how that advisor approaches investment. It's going to be a relationship built between the client and the advisor, and the client is placing their trust and confidence in the advisor's ability to both communicate and help them achieve their goals. There should be a comfort level established. So that's number one for me, is make sure that when you're talking with someone, you feel comfortable sharing your personal information and details. If you don't feel comfortable sharing that information, the financial advisor isn't going to have a full picture in order to really help you march forward. But then your initial meeting is generally going to be a broad conversation. You're going to be talking about your family information. Are you married? Are you single? Do you have children? If so, what are their ages? Are they going to be going to college? You're going to be talking about your job and what your income and financial information is. You're going to be talking about your assets and your debts and what your monthly expenses are, whether you have your estate planning documents in place, what your goals are for financials, for life, and what your hobbies are. So it's going to be a very broad conversation. You may be asked to bring in bank statements or a tax return just so the advisor can have a better understanding of, you know, what it is that they're looking to do. Now, I would say most advisors do a free consultation. They don't generally charge to meet with you during the first time. You know, for example, they're not going to generally charge you a flat fee to come and sit down and talk with them. It's going to be a conversation, and they're going to see if they're in a position to help you and if you're in a position that you want that advisor to work with you. If you find an advisor that you feel comfortable with, then it's a matter of what's their investment approach, what's their philosophy, how do they select what they're going to be investing in, what does it cost. So some advisors, such as myself, we do a fee-based planning. So my fee is a percentage of what assets I'm managing on your behalf, which means that fee is all I'm charging you. You can meet with me 10 times, you can meet with me 20 times, you can meet with me one time, and your fee isn't going to go up. You can have ongoing calls and contact, but it's important to understand how the advisor is charging, both for their fee and in the investments that they're helping you acquire. So I think that's really important to have transparency about fee, and it's something that you should be comfortable asking your advisor how that's going to work and what it's going to look like for you.
And then from there,
I was going to kind of just finish up and say from there, it's a matter of establishing ongoing contact. I would recommend at least on an annual basis. Sometimes clients feel comfortable meeting more often, but as things might change in your daily life, it might also affect how your investments need to be adjusted. So it's important to have ongoing conversation about what's going on and maybe how your goals are changing.
All right. We're talking with Deb DeLeers, a financial advisor for Northright Financial based in Green Bay, about how to start investing so we can bolster our financial future. We're getting some calls now, so when we come back, we'll take those calls. If you have an investment-related question, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Still a line or two for you to join in with. 800-642-1234. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking with Deb DeLeers, financial advisor for Northright Financial based in Green Bay, about how to start investing so we can bolster our financial future. If you have investment-related questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can send an email. Ideas@WPR.org is the address, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to the phones, and we'll start with Tim in West Dallas. Tim, welcome to the morning show. What's your question for Deb DeLeers?
Yes. Hello, Deb. I'm 66 years old, and unfortunately, I didn't put money away when I was in my 30s or 40s or 50s, and now I'm concerned about, I am working now full-time still. I got my mortgage paid. I've got some money to invest. What would be the quickest way for me to get that money to grow, even if it meant taking some risk?
Well, you can look at putting it into a diversified portfolio. So if you are working full-time, you still have the option to put that money into an individual retirement account. And with your age being 66, you'd be able to withdraw money from that at any time without penalty. Generally, once you're beyond 59 and a half, you can withdraw from an IRA without penalty. The advantage of putting it into an IRA vehicle is that the funds can grow tax deferred. So any growth in your account, you're not going to get taxed on that growth. You would simply be taxed at your ordinary income rate whenever you withdrew the funds. When you're putting money in the market in general, you're going to want to look at how your portfolio is invested, how the funds are allocated. So generally in any portfolio, you're going to have two types of investments. You're going to have equities, which are your stocks, your mutual funds, exchange-traded funds. So generally an interest of ownership in a company. And that generally carries more risk because if the company doesn't do well, the stock or the funds may not do as well. The other piece to the portfolio is fixed income. So those are bonds, treasury notes, things that are generally more safe, where you as the investor are typically acting as a creditor. So if a community needs to raise funds, they have the option to go do a fundraising campaign, or they can issue bonds that you as an investor can buy, and there's some guaranteed coupons and interest payouts that you can receive. So it's an allocation of equities and fixed income. The higher percentage of equities you have in your portfolio, for example, 90% equities, the riskier your portfolio is going to be. Right now, I would say we're at a point in the market where we've experienced a bull market for a very long time. And to some extent, all of us in the financial field are looking for a correction. We're expecting and anticipating that to happen. You know, some people say it's looking into 2019. Others say it could be as far as 2021. No one has a crystal ball. We can't know with certainty when that's going to happen. So I'm generally not putting people in a 90% equity portfolio, just in anticipation of that. But if you meet with an advisor and talk about these are my assets, these are my goals, this is money I have set aside in the instance that I need to access money quickly for an emergency, here's what I'm really willing to risk, you can put together a general diversified portfolio in the market, in an IRA, and help grow your funds for retirement. So that would generally be my first recommendation.
Tim, thanks for that call, and good luck with your investment strategy. Let's go next to Matt, who is calling us from Sussex this morning. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to Social Security, and for the most part, everything I hear is regardless of when you take it, the break-even point is probably around age 80. So thinking about that, if I take Social Security, let's say at age 62, and I don't need that Social Security check, but I take the money, I take that check, and I invest it in something that, you know, whatever, I can make 3%, 4%, 5%, let's say. My understanding is there's no way that by delaying my taking of Social Security would ever be able to catch up to that. Does that, I don't know if I explained
that. You know,
and
that's an interesting question just because of the multiple moving parts and pieces involved with it. So I mentioned in my last question, none of us have the crystal ball with respect to when a market might correct. And I'll say none of us have a crystal ball with respect to when our time is up, when we might pass away. And so when to take Social Security is a very loaded question, because if you start taking it at 62, you're going to have a reduced payout. But heaven forbid something happened to you while you were waiting to take a delayed Social Security payment. You know, if you were to take it early, you would at least be getting something that you could then invest and try to get some growth on. Can I say with any certainty that if you take Social Security early and invest it, that you're going to beat any return that you might obtain by delaying and taking it later? I can't say that with certainty, because if the market corrects, depending on how you're invested, you might lose a nice portion of that investable asset. So there's a lot of different factors into it, and it really comes down to comfort level. If you don't need the funds and feel like taking it early and wanting to invest it, I think that's a good option if that's the approach you want to take. Other people prefer to wait until 70 and take the larger payment, and then you're really just gambling on time. So I don't know that that's a direct answer, but kind of explaining the moving parts and pieces involved with it, it really comes down to a personal decision on your part if that's the way you want to approach it.
Matt, thanks so much for that call. You know, as I hear this stuff described, it really does remind me of advice you might get if you were headed into the casino, and not the least of which is don't risk more than you can afford to lose.
That's exactly right. In my opinion, I should say, every investment approach is going to be customized to what your unique situation is. There is going to be a risk factor involved in any type of investment that you make. And it's a matter of how much risk can you, as the investor, withstand based on your financial situation. So it does come down to what you have, what expenses you need to cover, and what can you afford to put into the market. And some people are more comfortable taking those risks. Other people are more conservative, and they're looking at more of a conservative approach. They are willing to forego higher returns in their investment account because it makes them sleep at night knowing that their money is in a safer allocation or in a safer type of investment. So it comes down to there's no cookie-cutter approach. It's very personalized to your situation.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Deb DeLiers is here today to answer your investment questions. So get on the phone and get her advice right now, 800-642-1234. We had a question from John from Milwaukee, and it was something that I really wanted to get to because this idea comes out a lot. You see a lot of advertising on cable and satellite television, and hear it on certain kinds of radio stations. You see it on Facebook and other social media where this or that person is hawking the benefits of investing in gold coins or gold bars, and you take this and this is your hedge. No matter what happens, gold is always going to be worth money, so buy gold right now and feel secure for the rest of your life. John from Milwaukee wants to know if it's a good idea to invest in gold bars. What do you think, Deb?
You know, I think to some extent there's some truth in gold is always going to be a physical substance and it's going to be there. So from a conservative standpoint, that is an option that people may want to look at for a defensive strategy. So again, I was saying there's equities and fixed income. Gold would fit into that more of a fixed income side because it's generally going to be safer from an investment standpoint than investing in stocks and mutual funds. The growth in gold, may be somewhat limited, but it really depends on how much you're allocating to gold. Do I think it can be a portion of your portfolio? Absolutely. Do I think it should be your entire portfolio or your entire fixed income segment? Probably not. Just because I believe in diversification, you should have some investment in each sector of the market. It should be well spread out. Because if gold plummets, and you're all in gold, that's really unfortunate. If you have a piece in gold and a little piece in other investments on the fixed income side, then it balances out a little bit more.
Now, I have read or been told from time to time that one of the problems here is that people who are investing in gold just can't ever afford to buy enough of it to really make a difference. Is there a tipping point on a commodity like gold that below that, it doesn't really, you know, if you're going to buy 100 gold coins, that's really not going to do you that much good, for example?
I don't know that there's a tipping point per se. I believe it can be part of your portfolio. And really, depending on what your goals are, if that's part of your conservative defensive strategy, what other fixed income investments are you comfortable putting yourself in and speaking with your advisor about it? And again, looking at what your overall goal is, it's a conversation to have with your advisor as to how much it should play a piece. And there are mutual funds and other exchange-traded funds that have gold as part of their investment strategy. So you can invest in those types of funds and have a little bit more diversification and exposure in other areas of the market and still let gold play a big part in what they're trying to accomplish. So there's several ways to bring gold in.
Okay, let's take another call. This time we'll go to Eau Claire, and Mark is with us. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Hey, I just had a kind of a comment for your guest. I get in a lot of conversations with people about investing options. We have a number of different things that we try to use in our portfolio. We've got some income property. We have mutual funds. We've got some bonds, stocks, And one of the things that always comes up is, you know, people that I talk to that are afraid of taking any risk and saying, I'm putting it in a savings account or in a CD or something. And yeah, I'd like to have you comment on inflation risk or those types of investments. I don't think a lot of people understand how much risk they're putting themselves in by doing that type of investment.
Yeah, and I think that's something, you know, especially now we're looking at inflation and looking to see what type of impact inflation may or may not have on the economy and on our investments going forward. And I will go back to saying that there is generally very few safe investments short of holding cash, maybe under your mattress, which I don't necessarily recommend. But even in CDs and investment accounts, the interest rate is affected by inflation, and you can feel as though you're putting money into these very safe vehicles and you're generating at least this safe type of interest, but that interest can definitely go down and be adjusted based on what inflation is doing. Now, granted, that may be more limited of a risk than having something in a 90% equity portfolio. The risks are going to be different, but there are still risks there, and I think no matter when you're putting money into an investment vehicle, even if it's something conservative like a CD, you should really understand the pros and the cons and how it may affect you. Because if inflation comes in and your interest rate gets affected and you're not receiving the yield that you thought you were going to, you know, you should understand that possibility.
Mark, thanks for your call. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Deb DeLeers, many people these days, maybe more than probably ever before in our history, find themselves in a situation where they have accumulated quite a bit of debt. Is it better to pay off the debt and then invest, or just pay off some of the debt at a slower pace and take some of that money that you might have used to pay debt and invest it?
I think that's a great question, and I think it comes down to what type of debt we're talking about. So I think you're right. Many of us carry some form of debt. For some of us, it's maybe limited to a home mortgage, maybe a car payment, maybe student debt, in which case those interest rates are generally fixed, and you know your payment is very simple. You're limited on your interest. Other people may find themselves with credit card debt or medical debt. Credit card debt can range anywhere from 12% to 25% interest. So if you're someone who's carrying credit card debt and you're incurring that interest charge month after month after month, I would recommend paying down that debt, getting rid of it, rather than investing, because you're not going to make a 25% return to make up for the 25% interest you're paying on that credit card. So pay off those types of debt where your interest rates are very high and variable and changing, because you want to get control of that. For people who have more of a fixed debt, like their home mortgage, and it's in a controllable interest rate, it's in a fixed term, they're managing that payment every month, and they have some extra, I think it's very reasonable to, if they want to pay a little extra on their mortgage, that's great. But if they also want to split up their extra revenue every month and apply some to an investment, that's the strategy I would implement. Because going back to one of my very first comments today, the sooner you can start putting money in the market, the sooner you can have it start working for you. But every debt type is going to be different. And again, that's a conversation to have with an advisor, with someone who can make those recommendations. I'm a firm believer in paying down debt, but also, obviously, if you can afford to put some into the market to start that investment habit.
All right, let's go next to Jerry in East Troy. Jerry, welcome to the morning show. What's your question or comment for Deb DeLeers?
Yes, good morning. My question is, I work with three financial planning services and advisors in my life. I have a reasonable portfolio. What are the common sort of fees or structures in engaging? I just want to know how I compare with, let's say, industry average. Because if I look over the retirement planning horizon, that's still maybe 20, 25 years down the road.
Great question. As far as fees go, I would say they're probably somewhat across the board. The industry has changed, and there's been some additional regulations on fee transparency over the last few years, and so I think more advisors are disclosing that. Again, speaking for myself and the financial group that I'm affiliated with, we're fee-based planners, so the fee is going to be a percentage of the assets that we have under management. Generally, I would say on average, that's going to range between 0.8% and 1.5% for the advisory fee. But then I would say there's also a second tier to that, and it's going to depend on what your advisor is investing. What do you own through that investment account? So, for example, there are various mutual funds that are out on the market that also have a commission load. For example, when you invest $1 into the mutual fund, if there's a 5% commission load, that 5% comes off the top. There may be another fee to your advisor, and there are internal expenses associated with all of the investments out on the market. So let's assume that's another 1%. So if you're investing a dollar, but there's commission charges and internal expenses, you may only be investing 93 cents into the market out of that dollar. So there are other fees and costs that may be associated with what you're actually purchasing within your investment account. And again, that's something where I believe in transparency and talking through those things with clients, and in fact, don't like to buy any mutual funds that have those commission loads. There are a lot of other options on the market that are lower cost or without that upfront commission. There are also alternative investments such as annuities or life insurance that are commissioned products, and it's not necessarily a monthly fee that's coming out of the account, but again, an upfront commission that's going to the advisor when the client purchases those items. And I think, again, it's important to have those conversations to know what it is you're paying and if it's something that, based on the services you're receiving, you feel comfortable paying.
Jerry, thanks so much for your call and for getting a hold of us. So that was a great question, and I'm sure that others have are interested in that, too. We're going to take a short break. Deb, one of the things that I've always been kind of confused about is whether or not a financial planner or financial advisor is obligated by law to always put the best interest of their client ahead of their own financial interest. And I know that there've been some regulations about that. There've been some changes. There's been a lot of discussion about that. And I would like to get that cleared up. We'll take that on when we return. And we have a whole bunch of people who want to talk to us, and we'll try to get to all of those calls before the end of this hour. We're talking with Deb DeLeers, financial advisor for Northright Financial based in Green Bay, about how to start investing so we can bolster our financial future. If you have investment-related questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking with Deb DeLeers, financial advisor for Northright Financial, based in Green Bay, about how to start investing so we can make ourselves a better financial future. If you have investment-related questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Before the break, I mentioned I think sometimes people can be confused by what the obligations of a financial planner or a broker or somebody has to always do what's in the best interest of the client. How do you know whether or not your financial agent is making decisions based on what's in your interest or in their own. And I guess the closest metaphor I can come to is, okay, so I take my car to the mechanic. What I hope they'll do is fix what's wrong for the lowest cost and not just do a bunch of work I don't need so that they can collect a paycheck. How do we know how our financial advisor is making decisions, whether or not they're in our best interests or in their own?
That's a great question, and it's been a topic that's been more prevalent in the financial industry over the last couple of years. So there has been recent regulation being pushed by the Department of Labor to create a fiduciary standard for people in the investment industry, regardless of really kind of what type of assets you're investing in the retirement space. I will say that the Department of Labor, that initiative hasn't necessarily gone through into law. However, the SEC, which is another entity that helps regulate the financial industry, is also working on creating a fiduciary standard very similar. So I think it's something that's going to come into play in this space where there is an ongoing duty or obligation for the advisors to be looking out for their clients' best interests and to force them to do things that are in the client's best interest based on the client situation. Should that be expected by the client, regardless of who you're meeting with? In my opinion, yes. And I think it comes to the interview style that you're going to have with your potential advisor or even follow-up interactions you're having with your current advisor. Ask them if they're subject to the fiduciary rule and if by nature of how they're licensed, they are in a position to act as a fiduciary. So generally under the SEC, if you're an investment advisor, you are subject to a fiduciary standard. In the brokerage world, that is more of the commission-based salespeople and financial planners. Again, that's what the Department of Labor was coming in to try to help regulate, to make sure that those working on commissions weren't being motivated by the commission rather than by doing what's best for the client. And so it's continuing to evolve, and I think just in light of the regulations being introduced, maybe the advisors that weren't subject to the rule have realized the expectations going forward, and they've probably amended the conversations they're having with their clients to make sure that they're hitting those standards.
Okay. Let's see. We had some callers who couldn't stay with us. Let's get to their questions. Bree from Milwaukee, rather, is 30 years old. She doesn't have a lot of debt, but she has a lower income. On the other hand, she just received a substantial inheritance. She wants to know what on earth she should do with this inheritance.
Oh, that's a great question. Sometimes an unexpected blessing can come from an inheritance. First thing that I would say is if you have a little bit lower income, but you're meeting your budget, if you have a little nest egg set aside, so a savings account where you have finances set aside for maybe a few months of expenses or an emergency situation, I'm a believer in having some of those liquid funds available without them being at risk. So if you can have a little bit of a nest egg set aside, I would say that's a part of what you may want to consider. But then beyond that, you have the option of investing in the market and by either putting your funds into an individual retirement account, so an IRA. I had mentioned earlier during the program today that if you invest in an IRA, that money grows tax deferred. So if you put in $100 and by the time you take your money out of the account, it's $1,000, you're not taxed on that $900 gain, which is a really nice benefit. The catch is in your 30s, you would have to wait until you're 59 and a half to access those funds without paying an early withdrawal penalty. So a portion of it could go into an IRA, or you could invest it into an individual investment account. An individual investment account is something that you can access your funds from at any time without any sort of penalties. The difference is the tax treatment. And so if you put $100 into your individual investment account and it grows to $1,000, you would get taxed when you take that money out on your $900 capital gain. So it's really, you'll get taxed either way to some extent. It's just a matter of how you're going to get taxed on it. But what's nice about the individual account at this age is that you have the ability to grow, but if you need to be able to access that money, you can do so without incurring penalties.
Bree, thanks for getting in touch, and good luck with that inheritance. What a blessing. Let's go back to the phone. Sam is with us in Madison. Sam, you're next. Go ahead. What's your question for Deb DeLeers?
Hey, good morning. So I live paycheck to paycheck for a long time, and now I have finally managed to hold a couple months' worth of savings, and I'm getting ready to start investing. My question is, I'm reading a book on investing right now, and in it, it talks about calculating price over earnings ratios to determine what stocks you should buy. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit confused by it. Could you expand on that for me?
Absolutely. Now, keep in mind that when you're buying individual stocks, you are buying a share of that individual company. So, for example, Apple. If you invest a dollar in Apple and Apple does poorly, you're going to lose your dollar or a percentage of that because your ability to grow is based on Apple's fundamentals, how they are managing their company, what products they have coming to market, how much they're earning, because those earnings are part of the calculation that's going to decide how much money is potentially going to get kicked back to an investor in that stock. So it's all a piece of the puzzle. Think of it more as the fundamentals of the company. You're looking at management, you're looking at products, you're looking at sales, you're looking at revenues and earnings. And if the company isn't earning money consistently over time, it can potentially be a sign that they're not going to have longevity in the market, or maybe their fundamentals in management or their products aren't there, and it makes it potentially more risky. There are other options as opposed to just investing in individual stocks. That can be a piece of what you invest in, but as you're looking through and doing your research on investments, look at exchange-traded funds or mutual funds. There are third parties who manage stock portfolios, so that those advisors or those third parties are doing all of the research on the stocks that they're purchasing for you. As an individual investor like yourself, if you're doing it on your own, it may be difficult for you to stay abreast of all the changes in each particular company that you're purchasing stock in. So if you're buying a mutual fund or if you're using a third-party manager to help pick your stock portfolio, that might be a better option, just so that you have someone else looking at those fundamentals. They have analysts whose job it is to research all of those factors to make sure that when they're pulling a stock into their portfolio, that it's got sound fundamentals, and hopefully then we'll be able to continue producing good earnings and be able to kick that back to the investor.
Sam, great question. Thanks for joining us this morning. Let's go next to Mark in Wisconsin Dells. Mark, what's your question for Deb DeLeers?
Can you hear me all right?
You bet.
I can.
Okay, good. My question is, I thought I heard Kevin McKinley one day say that if I was retired, I couldn't invest, I couldn't put money in a Roth IRA. And my question is that correct? And if so, can I put money in an IRA, Roth IRA, if I am retired but still working?
If you are working, so in order to put money into an IRA, you have to be using earned income. So if you are working and you have earned income, you can invest into an IRA, whether that's a traditional or a Roth IRA, as long as you meet the income requirements. Sometimes if you're a high wage earner, you're not able to contribute to a Roth. But the key is earned income, and that's from a job or employment of some sort.
What would be the advantage of a Roth IRA for a retiree who is still working?
So with a Roth IRA, the advantage is you're putting generally after-tax dollars into the Roth, which means that you've already paid taxes on the front end before you've invested. And then when you take money out of the Roth IRA, you're not taxed at the ordinary income rate. So generally, if you're anticipating to be in a higher income tax bracket or have sources of revenue that you're expecting to keep you in a higher tax bracket in retirement or when you're actually pulling the funds out and using them, it's an advantage to have a Roth because you are not taxed when you withdraw that money, compared to a traditional IRA where you're generally putting in either pre-tax dollars or you're getting a tax deduction for funding it, then when you do take the money out, you are taxed at the ordinary income bracket that you're in at the time you take it out.
Okay. We've got time for one more question. Let's go to Dustin in Wales. Dustin, what's your question for Deb DeLeers?
Hi, good morning. I was just wondering, I have a 10-year-old son who is interested in starting like an investment account and was just wondering, you know, at that age, what, you know, what my options are to help him get kickstarted with this.
So what you could do is open up an investment account. It would be like an UTMA or an UGMA account, similar to a bank savings account, but it's an investment version of that. And so you would be the temporary owner of that and able to make financial decisions on his behalf until he reaches the age of majority, at which time the account would turn over into his name. So he's an owner from day one, but you have authority to manage it. And then when he ages out, he can take over control of that account. And I think it's a fantastic idea to create that savings habit and to help show him how if you're putting money away and saving it now, that money can grow because it's putting a visual to it as opposed to just talking about it. So if you're in a position to do that, I think that's fantastic.
When I was 10, I was trying to save for a new bicycle. We're just about out of time, and we have gotten through all of the calls today, so good for us. Deb DeLeers, as we close the program very shortly here, as you're watching the markets, what trends are you seeing that new investors who may not know what to look for should consider?
You know, I think, again, the markets have been expressing a little bit more volatility in 2018, although they're still generally recovering and doing well. So I think it's still a good time to get into the market. However, be calculated about that. Be honest with yourself about what risk you're willing to withstand. You know, when you look at what the economists are saying, they're still projecting that 2018 is going to be a good year, but anticipating that there may be a correction coming up in the next 1 to 3 years. Don't take on more risk than what you are comfortable withstanding. You know, there's a lot of funds and mutual fund options that are available in the technology space that are a little bit different, taking a different approach than your standard technology funds. So I'm looking at a lot of those for my clients just because I think technology is something that's going to continue to be integral in our society. But I like companies that are taking a little bit different approach and coming at it from a new perspective. So have conversations with your advisor and see what fits for you.
And last minute of the show here, going forward, what's the best thing people can do to further educate themselves about investing?
Have the conversation and don't be embarrassed. I think that's a big barrier, is that people feel somewhat insecure because they don't have all of this background knowledge. If this isn't what you do for a job, this isn't your industry, don't feel like you have to be the expert. Find someone that you trust to talk with and bounce your ideas off of and really be educated. That's one of my goals when meeting with a potential client or a new client, is to educate them. They don't have to understand you know, every investment that I'm making on their behalf, but I want them to understand why I'm looking at it, and as we go forward, why I'm continuing to look at certain things to evaluate their portfolio. So just,
well, Deb, I'm pretty certain that our listeners felt educated today. So thank you for coming back on the air with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Deb
DeLeers.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Deb DeLeers is a financial advisor for Northright Financial. She is based in Green Bay. And again, thank you, Deb. The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Chasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.